The user experience is critical in making learning successful.
The UX of learning design is big. It covers all of it. One of the benefits to thinking about user experience design from the start is it helps us maintain motivation for the learners. It can reduce frustration and friction with the learning experience, and it creates a positive affect in the learner. And all of those things are important to learning, according to research.
That's Connie Melamed, learning experience design consultant, mentor, author, international speaker, and founder of Mastering Instructional Design. Connie joins us to share best practices on usability and learning experience design. Next on Powered by Learning.
Powered by Learning is brought to you by DaVinci Interactive. DaVinci's approach to learning is grounded in 30 years of innovation and expertise. We use proven strategies and leading technology to develop solutions that empower learners to improve quality and boost performance. Learn more at DaVinci.com.
Hello and welcome to Powered by Learning. I'm your host, Susan Court, and today I'm joined by DaVinci President Mason Scuderi and our guest, Connie Melamed, who is the force behind the eLearningCoach.com website and podcast and the founder of the Mastering Instructional Design community. Hi, Connie.
Hi, Susan. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us, Connie.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's great to see you again, Connie. You've been a guest on Powered by Learning before, and we're so excited to talk to you again. Of course, you're a longtime partner of ours at DaVinci, but let's get started by telling our listeners a little bit about your journey with the eLearning Coach and Mastering ID.
Okay, well, it's really hard to believe this, but I started the eLearning Coach website. I started blogging in 2009. And then I started the podcast in 2013, but it's only once a month, so it's not the same type of pressure that most people face. And after years of working with clients and writing articles and doing the podcast, I realized that there were just so many people who needed a good foundation in instructional design. So 4 years ago, pre-pandemic, I started the Mastering Instructional Design membership community. And there I teach all kinds of courses related to instructional design. The exciting part is there are so many aspects to instructional design. We're going to be talking about one of them today, usability. So I'm never bored.
And we're never bored talking to you. You have such great insights to share. So thanks for coming on the podcast again.
Really happy to be here.
Yeah, many years of experience, and we're excited to hear from you. So to help us get warmed up in talking about usability and learning experience design, let's start with your definition of usability.
So my definition of usability is taken from usability experts, and it's a measure of how well a product can be used by an individual in a particular context to achieve a goal. When we think about usability, we're thinking, can the learner or user reach the goal? Is the product easy to use? Those are the kinds of things that affect usability.
Yeah, I feel like usability is a term, too, that's often more associated with the commercial side of technology and creating a product to sell. You know, did a customer have a good usability experience when they checked out? But it's also important to recognize that it's a part of our learning design as well.
It really is. And when we think about our learning events and interventions as products, it helps us be able to wrap our heads around their usability.
So what is it about thinking about the user experience from your perspective that makes it important to include in learning design?
The user experience really refers to the totality of a person's experience with a product or maybe a learning event. And then usability is one part of the user experience. But also the kinds of things we're thinking about is the product satisfying? Is it engaging? Does it have few errors? And in terms of the total experience, if we really want to look at it big picture, we might be thinking about how is someone told that they need to take some, let's say, compliance training? What's it like to log into the LMS, if we're talking about e-learning? How smooth and fun of an experience or engaging of an experience is it when they're going through an e-learning course? And perhaps what kind of support are they getting from managers, What kinds of discussions are they having about what they've learned? How are they able to apply it? So the UX of learning design is big. It covers all of it. One of the benefits to thinking about user experience design from the start is it helps us maintain motivation for the learners. It can reduce frustration and friction with the learning experience, and it creates a positive affect in the learner. And all of those things are important to learning, according to research.
So we've all probably had our own run-ins with bad user experience design, whether it's, you know, checking out, buying something online, or, you know, a parking garage or some other place. But through the lens of learning, what are some common mistakes that us as learning professionals and instructional designers might make when it comes to usability?
Well, from the very start, not getting to know your users through interviews, surveys, failure to spend time with them makes it nearly impossible to create a product that meets their needs because we don't know who they are. And sometimes this is not the fault of the learning designer. Sometimes the system that they're working in doesn't give them the option to talk to learners. In fact, I've been in situations where clients thought that they knew more than the people for whom we were making training. And that's a problem. Another issue might be failure to understanding the context of the work that's being done. For example, I set out one time to build a course for nurses, and you know, the specs were that I was going to put audio in the course. And then by spending time with the learners, I discovered that these nurses are on a floor where they have to serve patients. So none of the computers had audio cards.
Wow.
So we really want to understand the context. And I think another problem, and this all really goes back to design and development, you know, not having some type of iterative process where you can test and get feedback from learners and then make revisions and test, you know, perhaps one more time. All of those can really improve usability, and all of those, when there's a failure to do them, are common mistakes.
Yeah, we always hear about focusing on the learner. I'm hearing you say that maybe this is a mistake some people are doing in kind of providing training that they think people need without really talking to the learner first.
Right, because so often what some higher up who may not be in tune with the people think is a performance problem, that's not the problem at all. I frequently will hear from someone after a subject matter expert has told me, perhaps given me an example that I can use in a scenario, the person will say, well, actually, that never happens. What really happens is, you know, this. They know it all, you know.
Well, it's good advice not to just throw training at a problem until you really understand the problem, that's for sure.
Connie, do you think creating user personas is a good way to combat that?
I really do. Now, there are some people who don't like personas who think that perhaps they stereotype or generalize. So I think if you really want to start doing personas, it's a good idea to be aware of the criticism so you can make sure that you're not stereotyping. I think it's helpful to break the audience up into subgroups and have multiple personas if you have time. I don't think you need to spend lots and lots of money on developing personas, but I think that it's a great way to humanize the approach. And for people who aren't aware of what personas are, I guess I should have defined that first. It's a fictionalized representation of a person or a subgroup of your audience that has the characteristics that are very common throughout the audience, such as if we're talking about managers, most of them may have degrees in business, that kind of thing.
Another method that you've mentioned on your podcast to get to know your user base is called the Think Aloud method. How does that work?
The Think Aloud method is really a wonderful, and it can be an inexpensive approach. So what you do is you provide a product to a participant. You request that they perform specific tasks. And here's the tricky part. You ask that they speak their thoughts aloud as they perform the task while you're observing them. And you observe their actions, their gestures, their facial expressions. And you're recording it all, possibly taking notes, and so that you can go back and look at it. Now, a lot of people have trouble or they're not used to thinking aloud. So it's great to, at first, demonstrate what it's like. The interviewee or the observer would demonstrate the thinking aloud approach, and that really helps.
How have you seen that work, Connie, and work that you've created? How has it made a difference?
Well, one experience that comes to mind was I was working with a client who wanted to do something really cutting edge, and she didn't want to put a next button in an e-learning course we were making. It was to study for an exam, a high stakes exam. And I just wasn't sure about not putting the next button in there. It seemed like we were going through contortions just to not put the next button in there, even though I totally get it. Nobody wants to go next, 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 next. So I completely understood it. So I said, why don't we just observe a few people, do think aloud? It was done remotely, and see how they experience it. And within 1 minute of looking at the interface, the user is saying, gee, I'm looking for the next button. I'm looking for the next button. I don't see the next button. Maybe I should click this button. And she must have spent several minutes confused and frustrated. So then, of course, my client said, oh, well, let's put the next button in there. It's so simple.
But better to find that out then than after you've done the course, right?
Oh my gosh, it would have wreaked havoc, you know, to design it the other way. And you know, the thing is, when we're working together and collaborating, it's like no one has an ego in it. We all just want to do the best thing. So it doesn't matter, you know, we're not thinking in terms of right or wrong. We're thinking what's best for this user. So it's, when I work with people, I think of us as a group mind. You know, there's no one individual contributing. And it was great because everybody wanted to do what was best for the learner.
It sounds like a really effective way and a really rich way when you think about observing someone going through the experience. Perhaps you've got a video camera or two. Maybe you're tracking mouse movements. That sounds really great. Sounds like there's a lot of outputs that come from that that can drive insights. But what if you don't have the budget for that? Does that take Think Aloud completely off the table, or are there any more budget-friendly approaches?
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because I interviewed two researchers from Penn State, and that's one of my podcasts, who did the Think Aloud method and wrote a paper about it for their new learning management system. And they really had a setup. They had two cameras. You know, they were observing everything. They did research, collected data. I mean, it was a true research project. But the way I'll do it is very inexpensive. I'll just set someone up with something like a Zoom call or a similar approach. They share their screen so I can see what they're doing, and they talk, and I can observe, you know, you can get that second window of the person who's speaking. And it really only costs the time to figure out the questions. Probably run the questions by someone else to say, are these clear? And then to actually do the think aloud test. So that's not very expensive. But there is even an even cheaper way if you're really in a rush. In an ideal world, we're not rushed, but the reality is we can have awful deadlines. Just grab a family member, a friend, or a colleague and ask them to take a look at it and think aloud. That can frequently show up the most obvious errors.
Well, that's great to know that there's a variety of different options, and we can move forward with Think Aloud no matter what our budget. Well, are there any drawbacks to the Think Aloud method that you've experienced?
I don't know if I've experienced so much, but the research talks about, first of all, people feel uncomfortable thinking aloud, and I get that. In fact, years ago, before there were mice devices as input devices, before they had mice or mouses, however we pronounce it, I was doing a little work for a company, and I was observed using a mouse. And the first time you used a mouse, I don't know if you can remember this, I was all over the screen, and it was embarrassing. And they were recording me. So even worse would be someone getting an insight into how you think. I mean, that would be truly embarrassing. So I understand why people feel uncomfortable. So this is where you give them a whole talk and say, we're not judging you. We're not even interested in really you as a person. We just want to get feedback on the product and improve the product. Then you prompt them if they forget to talk about it. And again, you demonstrate it. And then there's the expense if you're going to go all out and do the two camera setup. So those are probably the only negatives I can think of.
Sounds like there's a lot more to gain from doing something like this. We all get so close to the work that we do that it seems like an important step just to pause and make sure that what you're thinking actually is going to resonate with your learners.
I agree. And that's why I think prototypes are so important. And for those who aren't familiar with prototypes, they're a demo or some type of demonstration or short version of a product. And those are the kinds of things you can test in your Think Aloud testing.
Well, Connie, it's an exciting time for e-learning tools in general, but are there any tools for instructional designers to use to help improve the usability of their project?
Sure. And some of these we're borrowing from the world of user experience design, which is kind of a little bit more daring in what they use in their research, and from design thinking. So there are personas, which we already spoke about. There are empathy maps. And if you just look up empathy maps, you will find 500 of them online. And those are a visualization of how a person thinks, feels, how they act, and what they do. And you're kind of capturing all of that from interviews. So that's almost a next step of a persona. There are journey maps that originated, I believe, from following a customer's journey. So in our case, we're going to follow a learner's journey and notice all of the touch points where they come in touch with the system and where there are pains. So that goes back to that idea of looking at the totality of the experience. I think it's helpful to think things through with storyboards. Not all learning experience designers use storyboards. They can help us create more inclusive and accessible designs. So we can think about that from the start.
Well, that's a great list and great to learn more about the Think Aloud method to get to know our users.
Connie, circling back to your Mastering Instructional Design community you established, can you share some of the lessons that participants have learned from each other that would be of interest to our listeners and maybe just information in general about how people could get involved?
Sure. Well, they can go to masteringid.com to get involved. And when you ask what they've learned from each other, are you talking about the courses that we've taken or just from our live events when people discuss those kinds of things?
I guess mostly from each other, but whatever you want to share.
Well, sure. That to me is the beauty of a live community because people can ask questions in the forum. But where I feel that it really happens, where the community gels, is during our live events. And we have two every month. One is with usually a well-known speaker, and that speaker is very informal, and it's kind of an intimate gathering. And then when I give live courses, the questions that people ask are always something that the more introverted or shy people also want to know the answer to, but they won't speak up. So that's wonderful. Although there are a lot of newbies there and people who want to transition into the field, there are also people with many years of experience. Since I'm just one person with one perspective, I love the way they can contribute their experiences to whatever it is that I'm teaching. And I've also had people say, you know, it's an international audience. And I've also had people say, I've never worked with, you know, in small group work, I've never worked with international people before, and it gives me a new perspective. So it's all just been wonderful for me and for the members. So thanks for asking.
Well, before you leave us, Connie, tell us what's next in your journey with Mastering Instructional Design and the e-learning coach.
Right now, I don't have any big changes in plans. I just plan to keep finding out. I just did a survey what topics interest people, and I plan to either get speakers on those topics or I already have and develop courses, maybe one or two, on occasion, an 8-week course to help people improve their instructional design skills.
Awesome.
Well, Connie, we appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today and share some of your newer insights with our listeners. And as always, thanks for being a friend of DaVinci and a guest on Powered by Learning.
Thanks for having me. It's really been fun speaking with you.
Mason, it's always a lot of fun to talk with Connie, and I love her reminders about how all of us should continue to remember to focus on the learner.
Oh, absolutely, Susan. Connie's amazing, and she always brings forth good insights for us to learn and grow from.
What were some of your takeaways from the conversation?
Well, I really enjoyed contrasting usability and usability study with how it might happen in the outside world. So product design, thinking about users getting to whatever they need to do on a website, such as purchasing a product, and then contrasting that with some of the challenges that we face in terms of delivering learning content. I really liked the learning about the Think Aloud method and the observations of how we can capture what users are experiencing in real time on our creations. I think that's something that we can definitely take away. And then also, just a clear message for us as e-learning professionals that we have to consider our users and building content for our users. I know we all carry our own preferences around design and layout and experience, and we just have to keep the users in mind as we're building learning experiences.
Good advice. Thanks, Mason. And special thanks to our guest, Connie Melamed, for joining us today. If you have an idea for a topic or a guest, please reach out to us at poweredbylearning@davinci.com. And don't forget that you can subscribe to Powered by Learning wherever you listen to your podcasts.